So we're going to try something a bit different for this show, although not different for the show in general. Now, if you recall, for those long-term listeners, we used to do a show on Tuesday called Trending Tuesday. Trending Tuesday. Where we covered the top trending topics according to Google. And today, we're going to talk about progress this show in a similar manner, but we're going to talk about the more popular or interesting news stories over the past week instead of the trending topics according to Google, because right now they pretty much all be the same 10 topics. And to be quite frank, sometimes I didn't like the trending topics and I didn't really want to cover them. So we're going to be covering the VP debate that's occurring tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are going to be covering the COVID situation in the White House and around the country, concern about Facebook being broken up, health workers addicted to drugs. We're going to talk about New York closing. California has stipulations to its opening. Drinking is on the rise, and Harvey Weinstein has not yet finished falling. So this is going to be a show of headlines. Let's get it started. This is Lessons from the screen.
John Boy.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our brain power, our time, our energy, so that you don't have to. You are always welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc., a Black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life of Black people in America through educational, culture shift, and economics. You can check them out www.pactsinc.org. Go ahead and do what you can to help them. Let's jump right into it. Headlines for last week. So before we get started, I want to put it out. Next Wednesday, we are going to be covering Joe Biden's Lift Every Voice plan. We talked about Trump's platinum plan last week. We're going to be covering headlines this week. Next week, we are going to be talking about Joe Biden's Lift Every Voice plan. So make sure you tune in for that. And on Saturdays, we are going to be continuing our review, our breakdown of HR 748. We are two shows away from completing it. Maybe three shows. I haven't decided if I'm going to stretch that out yet. So make sure you tune in for those. But getting into this, the vice presidential debate is tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, EST. Kamala Harris is going to be debating against Pence. And she is planning on having a barrier of plexiglass between her and Pence. Pence's wife had COVID, and he is responsible for America's COVID task force response, and he's followed the president's lead of downplaying it despite it showing up in his closest circles and even in his own household. But as for the debate, I expect both of these two to pretty much parrot what their presidential leads did. I expect them to pretty much champion their presidential candidates, to talk about what they will do in the case of Kamala Harris and what they have done in the case of Mike Pence. I expect there to be a lot of lying on the part of Mike Pence, and I expect there to be quite a bit of dancing on the part of Kamala Harris. I don't expect to get much out of this, and I don't really expect it to even be as entertaining as the Biden-Trump debate was, so I'm still kind of up in the air about whether or not I'm going to watch it. I don't know that there is honestly anything to be gained from a presidential debate or from a vice presidential debate, especially where it contains a situation where the vice presidents aren't being elected themselves the way that they were in the olden days. So with things being the way they are, maybe you get to be more comfortable with somebody maybe stepping up to be president should something happen to the president. And in the case of Mike Pence, with Trump having coronavirus, that is more of a real possibility than in the case of Joe Biden, although they are both older than Moses after he crossed the Red Sea. So I'm not sure how this whole thing is going to work out. I'm not sure what is going to happen here. But one thing I am sure about is there isn't going to be much value added to the discussion from this debate. That's one thing I am sure of. So I expect it to be more of what we saw, but I do expect there to be quite a bit of decorum, traditional, respectable politics. I don't expect them to get into the arguing matches, the bickering sessions, and the low blows that we saw from Trump and Biden. So I don't expect it to be saucy either. So yeah, but that's coming. For those of you that are deeply into the political arena and you just love the opportunity, really what this is this is an opportunity for both of them to make the case as to why they should be president in the future. That's really what vice presidential debates boil down to, in my opinion. If you are worried about the presidential election and blah, 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 yeah, you ain't getting none out of this. And honestly, like I said, I don't even really think that this debate should be happening. I think if Trump didn't have COVID-19, this should have been replaced with another presidential debate. The VP that's debating, in my opinion, serves no tangible purpose for the average American consumer, the average American citizen. And yes, I could talk about it in great detail about blah, 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 but at the end of the day, don't none of that shit matter. So that's what we doing. Now, COVID has been found in 4 beaches around Lake Superior so far, and it's also been found in the water supplies of various college campuses. Trump and numerous people around him have contracted COVID. Trump actually went to Walter Reed for a weekend before he self-checked out because he was bored, and has continued to flout safety protocols. And apparently he had been given his first positive test result. That sounds like somebody gave it to him. It sounds funny. Anyways, apparently he had gotten his first positive test result a few days before it was reported that he had tested positive with the second test result. And this is all also tied into an 81% increase and testing in the DC area, with people just in general being concerned because DC is turning into a COVID hotspot, especially with it popping up in high level political circles across both sides of the spectrum. And across both sides of the spectrum, when I say that, I mean both sides of the Republican spectrum, because there are effectively at this point 2 very distinct and different Republican parties. That being said, COVID around the nation has actually picked up and is surging, and we're seeing numbers that are similar to the numbers that we saw in August and April. And we are in the middle of a second surge. Some people are saying a third surge. Me, myself, I call it an extended first surge, because we never really had the die down that you saw in other countries. Yeah, that thing dipped a little bit, but it ain't dip. You know what I'm saying? It didn't, you know, your auntie at the cookout getting stuck underneath the how low can you go bar dip. So I don't know what to say about that, but this is interesting because Trump has been on Twitter tweeting about being invincible. He's made comments about possibly being immune. He's still not wearing a mask. He's still doing public events. He's still having gatherings. So at this point, you have to stop and ask yourself, what the hell is going on, and what would it take to contain this man who has apparently learned a lot, not to mention his administration now using the fact that he has contracted COVID to say that he is now a better candidate for leading the country out of this COVID situation because he has contracted it, effectively attacking Joe Biden for not contracting COVID-19. That is something that I don't think anybody could have credibly and seriously made a statement of prior to it actually happening. The idea that this man would actually attack his opponent for not getting sick and for taking necessary precautions to keep from getting sick is amazing. Without a shadow of a doubt, that is one of the most amazingly sad political developments in modern American political history. So that is fantabulous, and that is what we are dealing with, unfortunately, sadly, and to error. So yeah, that's what we got. Moving on, a leak from Facebook suggested the company is worried about being broken up by Congress, which isn't far-fetched considering the love-hate relationship this administration and the governing party has with social media platforms. They're apparently preparing a defense in case they are forced to split by sending Instagram and WhatsApp in their own separate directions. And one of those defenses is that both acquisitions were approved by the government. Now, this is an interesting scenario. I don't know that it's going to happen, and there is no real credible evidence that it is going to happen outside of the disdain that the Republican Party seems to have for social media platforms right now, and the disdain that Trump seems to have for social media platforms right now. It's not outside of the realm of possibilities, though. There is a anti-monopoly policy in place in American society where companies are not allowed to corner the market and ruin competition. And Facebook has essentially done just that in certain ways. Now, obviously, there are a lot of other social media apps and platforms that are doing very well in these modern times. You got Reddit, which I believe is quickly becoming one of the fastest growing and the largest and most used social media apps out there, although Facebook is still largely in charge. You have Twitter that's doing its thing. You have YouTube, which is actually a social media platform. You have a couple of different things out there, but Facebook, by and large, especially with the acquisition of Instagram and WhatsApp, is definitely at the forefront. They have the lion's share of the market, and they are doing their thing. So I'm not saying it's outside the realm of possibilities, but I am saying that it would be an interesting development if it were to occur. It would also be interesting what that would mean for the users. I don't think it would really mean much for users, as most people that I know, and I believe the studies will show, that most people have a favorite platform and they don't really dance too much with all of the others. I don't see there being a break in any sort of the integrated or integrationist features that the softwares have with each other in terms of Facebook and Instagram. I don't really see there being a big hit to the end user, but you never know with these things. You never know exactly what could happen or who could take ownership of those other platforms and what direction they could go in. So, and all of this is even still put on hold with, you know, it really may not happen if Joe Biden ends up winning. But it is something interesting to think about nonetheless. A lot of people are talking about Facebook being too big. A lot of people have issues with the authority that Facebook has as an international entity and its ability to flout national regulations in various different nations. And so it's just one of those topics to me that's interesting to follow, even though I am not on any social media. So there were tapes that were leaked out of Melania Trump. She was recorded by a friend, and during the conversation she talked about various things that have occurred throughout President Trump's first term. She's talked about various things that have happened to her and from her perspective, and comparing legacy and various things. And these tapes did not get very much fanfare because Trump got that Rona. But if he had not got that Rona, I'm pretty sure these tapes would have definitely become a big story. And you know, I'm sure that there are those of you out there that think maybe he got that Rona, but you know, yeah. Well, anyways, and I do believe he got that Rona. But apparently, Melania Trump feels some type of way about the media. She feels like they are unfair to her and her husband. And she pretty much confirms that she shares the same view as Donald Trump. The only reason I'm reporting on this, or I'm covering this, not reporting on anything, because I'm just basically going over news stories that have already gone through the pipeline over the past week. But the only reason I'm really talking about this is because there are a lot of people that I talk to that think that Melania Trump is another victim. They believe that she is caught up in a mess of foolishness. All she wanted was her green card, and she just got involved in all of this other stuff. And listening to the tapes, it paints a very different picture of Melania Trump as a woman who fully supports her husband, who fully understands what her husband is doing, and who fully gets it and is right there with him. So she came across as a female Donald Trump. Not quite as much as Ivanka does, but yeah, I don't know that you can call her a victim anymore after that. Anyways, go listen to the tapes. And it's always funny to me to hear millionaires, billionaires, and people that live privileged lives. I don't care how much time they spent in poverty. If they've spent, you know, 10, 15, 20 years in a life of luxury, in the lap of luxury, living a life of privilege, it's always interesting for me to hear them complain about their lives as if it's so sad and so brutal and so unfair and so unjust and so this and so that. Lady, you and your husband have contracted the coronavirus through your own ignorance and refusal to heed health officials and safety protocols. And then you got sent to one of the best healthcare facilities on the planet to receive the best healthcare services in the world, in the solar system, only to then come home and complain about how unfair life is to you guys. This is totally amazing. You have resources that most other people in the known galaxy that we're aware of don't have access to. And you still find a reason to complain? Look, I had a homeboy that's got gout, asthma, diabetic, got one lung removed, and is missing a leg. And he still don't have nothing to complain about. Y'all got everything and your working, functioning faculties and bodies, and y'all can't be happy for some reason. It is amazing to me. But that is neither here nor there. Let's move on. So in California, according to NPR, to tackle racial disparities in COVID-19, they are enacting new metrics for reopening. The state has implemented a new health equity requirement on the state's 35 largest counties and those with a population of more than 106,000. It's believed to be the first measure in the U.S. And they're saying that in order to advance to the next phase of the economic reopening, counties will have to reduce the levels of the virus in their most vulnerable communities by meeting certain positive test positivity goals, as well as showing target investments and resources such as increased testing, contact tracing, and education. So in order for a county to be able to proceed to the next step of economic opening, they have to show that they are putting in the work to reduce the impact of COVID-19 in poor and vulnerable communities. And they're not saying they have to just reduce it outright. They are saying that they want to bring the counties in the most disadvantaged neighborhoods more in line with the county's overall level. And I actually like this. I actually like this because it forces the counties and the localities to take a step to ensure that those that are most vulnerable and most affected are taken care of. So if you want to open your business, you need to make sure that the people on the other side of the train tracks is doing all right, or at least are doing as well as you are doing. So I like it, especially that it's focused on the largest counties, because we know that those are the counties that drive much of the economic impact in the state. And those are also the counties that have the most black people in them. Now, a lot could be said about its actual tangible impact, and I can't really get into that because the cynic in me can spot a lot of things that are wrong with the policy. But I'm trying to turn over a new leaf, at least for this show, at least for the 30 minutes of this particular show. So I'm going to keep that to myself. And then if it goes the way my inner me is telling me it's going to go, I'm going to have to bite the bullet and do another show giving them the business. But on the surface and as it stands, I do like it. I like the fact that economic progress will be slowed until those people that need to be taken care of are taken care of. I do still have questions about how exactly they're going to be taken care of and the quality of being taken care of that they're going to achieve. But on the surface, I like it, and you should definitely go and check out NPR and look at the California and what they're doing and do your own research. Read up more on that, because that is definitely something that you are going to be interested in. But in the middle of talking about cities opening, we're also going to be talking about cities closing, as New York City is closing down parts of Brooklyn and Queens in response to surges in the coronavirus. And so this is interesting, because on the West Coast they're talking about opening up, and on the East Coast they're talking about closing down, especially when you look at them, what's going on in DC and all up and down the East Coast, in the Midwest even. It's very interesting just the juxtaposition and how, you know, how different things are on the coast. But as a whole, all over the country, for the most part, cases are spiking, cases are surging. So to find New York City, which has not been the talk of the town for a month or two, and I believe Florida was racing to catch up to New York, but New York slowed down. New York City, the city, slowed down. It got things under control, and now it finds itself closing back down again as things begin to surge. And who knows, maybe people got too comfortable, maybe they didn't, maybe this is just a new, more virulent strand. They've talked about how that is the case out there in Texas. Who knows what's going on, but I do know that you can't play around with this shit. You either got to do it or you're not. And I feel like far too many Americans are playing around with this COVID, and far too many politicians are using it to score political points. And American adults say they are drinking 14% more often during the corona pandemic. According to a report in the journal JAMA Network Open, the increase in frequency of drinking for women is more pronounced, up 17% according to last year, and instances of heavy drinking among women, which for women is defined as four or more drinks within a couple of hours, has spiked by 41%. The participants were aged 30 to 80. So the report didn't offer insight into the drinking habits of younger adults, but the study did take a sample of 1,540 adults and compared their self-reported drinking habits during the spring with the year prior. And I do believe that people are drinking more. People are stressed out. It's an election year. Donald Trump is the president. In the middle of a pandemic, they're worried about their jobs, their houses, their economics. It's a lot to be stressed out about. And people can't go out and really do what they need to do or to release that stress. America is, in my opinion, a sexually repressed country. So the only outlet that leaves is drinking and beating the dogs. Anyways, so I believe it. I believe that people are drinking. I believe that people are definitely taking to that bottle. And Americans have an affinity for the bottle anyway, so it's not that far out of place. So, yeah. But I thought I always find little studies and reports like this interesting, because I connect them to so many other things, like the rise in domestic violence disputes, domestic violence cases, the rise in, disorderly conduct cases, the rise in civilian unrest, civic unrest, the rise in a lot of these things. And that brings into another point where you're dealing with these social justice issues that we're facing that are becoming more and more popular in the news and the TV stations because they generate ratings. I don't believe for a minute that these people actually care about us, but they do care about them ratings that broadcasting our deaths seem to bring and our mistreatments. So, but I just thought it was interesting. Americans are drinking more. And who knows? Maybe it'll be a return to the time before prohibition, when white men everywhere got so stupid drunk that they beat their wives to sleep and then passed out from their liquor. Who knows? Probably not. That's a bit extreme. But it has happened before in the past. And according to another study, health workers, doctors, and nurses may be addicted to drugs. No, maybe they are. One of the nurses has come clean, and she says that it happens frequently. They are addicted to the drugs that they're supposed to be giving to you, the patients. They're stealing medications. Fentanyl in particular is becoming a major culprit, and this is something that is reportedly happening in increasing numbers, and according to some, it is becoming a major point of concern. Go figure. You have healthcare professionals working in a highly stressful environment. Then you overwork them because of the pandemic. Then you put them in a situation where they are constantly dealing with people who need medications. The medications are super addictive, and you trust them. There are going to be some people that are going to use the drugs. There are going to be some people that are going to get addicted to the drugs. And there are going to be those people that also talk to and encourage others to do the same. And I know we in America like to think that we are above such moral degradation, but let me assure you, we are not. Doesn't take that much of a look back or look forward or just a look out to see that. But apparently we struggle to see that. So this was something that I thought was interesting because it potentially speaks to a second wave of dealing with fentanyl issues and dealing with the addiction issues we faced before COVID hit, where everyone was talking about the addiction to drugs that white people were going through and the healthcare emergency that it was caused. And I do remember there being several discussions about comparing that to what the black people went through when we had our drug addiction problems. But that's neither here nor there. That hasn't gone anywhere. It's still there, still simmering, smoldering underneath the surface of all of this pandemic stuff and all of this Trump and election stuff. We are still having an issue with people being addicted to drugs, and that is still a major issue. So if you thought the opioid situation was done, nah, buddy. We're still dealing with it, but now it's on another level where we have doctors and nurses that are actually now getting addicted to opioids. And finally, Harvey Weinstein is getting new charges brought to his door. If you thought we was done with Harvey Weinstein, apparently you got another thought coming. He's currently serving 23 years in prison for his previous rape convictions, and he is now facing 11 new felony sex crime charges for the rape of two women, one of which was allegedly raped twice. So he raped one woman in 2000 and let me see, when was it? I actually have that article pulled up right in front of me. Go figure. He actually raped one woman in September 2004 and September 2005, and then he raped another woman in November 2009 and again in November 2010. Wow, that is pretty crazy. If he's raping the same woman in the same month of the next year. Wow. Huh. Now, I'm not one of those people that feels like he got what he deserved with this 23-year sentence. I was actually one of the people that was like, I don't understand how these feminists could be celebrating this type of conviction. I felt like he got off light. I felt like he got off easy. I felt like they gave him a pass and any of the other words you can think of to put there. And so I'm actually not bothered by the fact that he's getting more charges brought to his doorstep. But look, I don't really know what you do to a man who has been allowed to live his entire life raping people, to achieve a tremendous level of success, and to now be 68 years old in the twilight years, having all of his best years behind him and all of his fond memories behind him, now being sentenced to jail. I really don't know if there is anything you can do to somebody that's going to be considered justice when you let that much time go by. So, and that's something that I think we got to contend with. Look, we get to take this stuff more seriously a lot sooner. Not only would you prevent other people from going through the same type of trauma, which is why, and I know I'm gonna catch a lot of flack for this, but this is also why I'm not a fan of calling somebody a hero, because they come forward 20 years, 30 years later after a bunch of other people have already come forward. No, the hero is that first person, if you want to label them a hero. The person that steps forward before anybody else. None of those other people should get that label. I'm not saying you shouldn't still call them brave, or especially not the second or third person. You shouldn't still call them brave, or shouldn't still commend them for stepping forward. But the hero here is the first person. The person that initially started the situation, the challenge, the avalanche. That is the person that's the hero. And in particular, the hero is the person who comes forward right away and tries to prevent it from happening to other people. So I get the narrative behind, you know, just wanting to encourage people to step forward. But there has to be a drive towards getting people to come forward immediately afterwards, not shouting them down, not shutting them up, not telling them to go away, not making them feel like they're not believed, that they're not supported. We got to do a better job of that. And in the black community, if I can pivot on a dime real quick, because I do like for these shows to be black community focused, even though I haven't done that at all for the most part this show, outside of giving my opinion as a black man, which I guess does make it black focused. But we especially have to do a better job of this, because this type of behavior is running rampant in our communities, and we know it is, and we like to pretend like it's not, but we know it is. Our comedians make jokes about it. Our families know who to keep the kids away from, know who not to let the girls go around, know who to keep the boys away from. And instead of dealing with those issues, we sweep it under the rug and do what we can to keep people from being in compromised situations, instead of removing the people that create the situations in the first place from the scenario so that everybody can be free and happy. We've got to do a better job of that. And this has been the episode. I want you guys to tell me what you thought about this. Do you think we should keep doing it, or do you think we should just stick to doing the long form deep expose analysis that we have been doing over the past year or so? Because we got away from the trending Tuesdays, I want to say about a year or more ago. So let me know what you think. Hit me up, patrick@thinkfreebefree.com, or you can leave a comment on the show page, www.freedomtrainradio.com. look for the Lessons from the Screen link. And you can also, if you are a black podcaster and you want your podcast on the Freedom Train Network, definitely head on over there and click on the I Want a Podcast link, or you can hover your mouse over the contact display and drop down box will come up for podcast submission. Submit your podcast there. You don't have to do anything. You don't owe us anything, and you don't, you know, like, nobody's going to ask you for any percentage of anything. You retain all your ownerships and all your other distributions, whatever. So definitely go ahead and do that. If you are a black person that wants to podcast and already has a podcast, if you want a podcast and don't have a podcast, we can help you start the podcast. So do that as well. Remember to go to Amazon and get the book, www.amazon.com. If you use the Smile link, definitely use the Smile link for PAX. And the book is called The Chasm, talking about the history of the black family, the black man and woman in America, the problems we're having, when they started, why they started, and what we can do to fix it. Definitely go get that. Check that out. Support your boy. And if you want me to do anything for you, speak, whatever the case might be, visit your city, send a prayer for your mama, whatever the case might be, definitely hit me up. Again, the email address is patrick@freedomtrainradio.com. And I will see you next week. No, I won't. I will see you Saturday when we go over HR 748.
This is Lessons from the Screen.
John Boy.
So thank you guys for listening to the show, to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you always enjoy it. Remember, you can check out all of the shows. All of them are going to be only found on the Freedom Train Network. That's www.freedomtrainradio.com. And that goes again for all of the shows on the network. You can only find all of the shows available for all of the shows on the network on Freedom Train website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. So go there and check them out. You only get the latest 25 shows, I believe, on the podcast directories. So check us out. Show support for all of the shows we have. Shelby's World, Enigma, Self Hour, The Fix, Sports Podcast, Freedom Train Podcast Series, and all of the other shows that are around. Definitely go and show them love. As for this show in particular, you can check us out. Support us on Patreon.com. That's www.patreon.com. patreon.com/LFTS. That's patreon.com/LFTS. And there you can drop us. You can show support by sponsoring the show, giving us money every month, giving us money per episode, and just letting us know that you support us. And by doing such things, you allow us to be able to spend more time creating and composing the shows. Shows like this series and shows like a lot of the series that we do take a lot of time to put together. We're talking about hours upon hours upon hours of research. And it'd be nice to be able to take the time to do those shows and do them correctly, the way we really want to do them. And also to be able to do them more frequently, because a lot of these shows should probably be done a lot more frequently. So, love you. See you next week. Hope you have fun.